Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk to Coach Gary Barnett, our college football insider. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Steven, I am so good. It's unbelievable. So I'm ready. Let's get going on this college football
stuff. Let's do it.
The last couple of weeks have been unbelievable.
It has been, except for Mizzou, Kansas State, and Kansas fans. It's been unbelievable because we don't want to believe it, but here it is. But I'm going to start off with some good news, and I would like you to give me your perspective as a former head coach in college football, the significance of this. And so Eli Drinkwitz obviously having a tough time on the field with his team this year. You said for many, many years that the toughest year for a college football coach is his second year when he takes a program over and when he's trying to build his own program. That second year is always the toughest. And boy, we're seeing that. And we're hoping that's what it is with Eli Drinkwitz. It's that second year. It's going to be tough. And then you can start to see things move forward in years three and four. A lot has been riding on Mizzou landing a five-star recruit out of the St. Louis area, Luther Burden, who his rivals has him as the number one wide receiver in the nation, number seven player overall. And it's even just more than just the player that he is. It's the significance of being able to land this player when the final three is Mizzou, Georgia, and Alabama. And he makes his announcement yesterday, and he picks Mizzou. And boy, we played, Nate, I played you the video, and I don't know if you've seen this, Coach, of Eli Drinkwitz at the watch party waiting to hear what school Luther Burden was going to pick. And man, oh man, Nate, how would you describe what Coach looked like when he got the word?
He just looked completely relieved.
I mean, he puts his head in his hands and kind of bends over, and he's almost like, oh, thank you, dear Lord, sweet Jesus. We got him.
He looked like a guy who was in desperate need of some good news and finally got
right.
some.
And along with that, they've got the number seven quarterback in the nation, this kid Sam Horn. They're putting together a recruiting class that has him in the top 15 now. And look, I know there's much more than just getting the kids. Then you got to coach them and you got to put the product on the field and you got to win. But how significant is something like this for Eli Drinkwitz as he's facing these struggles right now in year two at Mizzou?
Well, it's great for yourself as a coach. You're selling hope, okay, and always you're selling to your players, you're selling to your fan base, you're selling to your assistant coaches, and so this is a small victory, and it's a small step. It feels like a big step to everybody else, but it is a small step. Football is a complementary sport. It takes 26 guys every week, and it's unlike any other sport in that you completely change your people every three downs or four downs or whatever it is. A completely different set of guys come out. And so what you try to do is build strength at every position so that you don't have a weakness. And you got to keep it a little bit in perspective, because just as Coach Drinkwitz gets a five-star recruit, Georgia and Alabama just turn and go get another one.
Right.
And so that's, you know, they're going to have 31 or 24 instead of 25 this year, five-star recruits on the team. So it's complimentary. And, it's great news, and you ought to be happy. We'll find out when he gets here whether or not he can handle college, whether or not he can handle being away from home, whether he can handle the workload. Those are all unknowns. Because he's a five-star and because you know his family well, you know where he's from, you know the coaches, you know, your risk is less. And every player brings some degree of risk when he comes to a program and has a degree of risk. Five-star usually means there's maybe a little less risk in some areas than other areas. So, if you're putting one of those players in place, that is as good as anybody else has at that position, at that one spot. Now you've got to surround him with similar guys, and then they have to play. So it's a great first step. You know, I remember in my first recruiting year at Colorado, after I came back, I had 2 5-stars. Well, guess what, guys? They both left, and they were both problems. So now I just want to temper it a little bit, but it is great. And I felt the same way that Eli did yesterday. It all comes down to everybody else that's around them. If you don't have a quarterback getting the ball, if you can't protect the quarterback, you know how that goes. You know, I'm not telling you guys anything. But you do have to keep it a little bit in perspective. But it's no question it's a big first step. It's critical that you have more of those. But it's a relief if you're a coach that you're finally getting, you know, that you're getting another guy. You hope you've got other guys that are maybe not as good, but as ballyhooed. And you got to be careful because all your other players are watching this. And some of them are going, yeah, we got another guy to join our group. And then the other guys are going, we'll see if he's really that good. You know, we're making a lot of ballyhoo around one player. What about the rest of us? So it's a complicated deal, but it's a good, very good first step.
What was the biggest recruiting battle that you ever won as a head coach?
I'm not sure I can tell you that one. You know, I mean, as a head coach, I mean, when we got Darian Hagan.
Or even as an assistant, just any recruiting battle that you think back to.
I'd say Darian Hagan and Sal Lunesi were the two biggest that I personally was involved with because both of them involved Oklahoma and involved Nebraska. And, you know, both head coaches, you know, I, as an assistant, I was head-to-head with the head coaches. And so those two guys. But let me tell you, every time you got the guy you went after, you felt like that was an important win. And you have to feel that way. You must feel that way. I remember it took us 4 years to beat Stanford on a player at Northwestern, and the guy never played. But so much has to do with what happens once they get to school and once they get into the surroundings and how they handle this and that. So it's you just have to temper it a little bit.
And boy, for people that don't have a great recollection of that. I mean, Sal Lunesi, I remember, and of course he died at the age of 21 from inoperable stomach cancer and lung cancer. And he was that, I mean, you obviously can tell us more, but I'll never forget that story about how the Colorado team rallied around him. And then, you know, Darian Hagan, you know, became the quarterback. And that was, I mean, you mentioned that being a huge recruiting battle, but boy, That's a story that could be a movie.
Yeah, there's no question, and it is a movie. Actually, to tell you the truth, they made a documentary on it. Now they're proceeding to make a movie.
Oh, they are. They're going to make an actual movie out of it.
Yeah, and it's called Sal Lunesi's Story: Born to Lead, and you can get it on CBS Sports, and it plays. It was actually nominated for an Academy Award in the documentary series. Didn't win it, but. It's out there, and you can get it on demand. It's really a heck of a story, and you know, if you got an hour to kick around one night, look it up and watch it.
No, absolutely. Coach Gary Barnett is our guest. So no game for Mizzou, and they just and look the final score didn't look as terrible as the Tennessee score did. But I was talking with some different people about. You know, Mizzou's last game against Texas A&M, and it just, I mean, that thing was over, I mean, by the end of the first quarter. I mean, that was, and again, it was, I mean, I don't know what else you could say. I mean, it was over by the end of the first quarter. That's, again, just a situation where they came out, they got rolled, and the rest of the game was pretty much about stats.
Well, Stephen, they've outscored 63-10 in the first quarter this year.
Yeah.
And you're in the wrong league if you're playing with the worst run defense in the country, which they are. They're last in the nation. So you're in the wrong league playing with a defense like that because that's where they're going to go after you right there, and people have. And I mean, 63-10 is a very, very telling number when you look at the stats.
All right, let's move on to Kansas State and Kansas, Nate Buchady.
Yeah, I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about with Kansas right now, so we might
come on
from that. But there is something to talk about with K-State, and this is, I just think, really interesting, Coach. Chris Klieman, his Wildcats are on a bit of a losing streak when it comes to the Big 12, 8 games in a row since they've won a Big 12 game. And yesterday he did something. It was kind of an eyebrow raiser. He asked the media covering the news conference for more positivity. I'm going to read the quote to you so I get it right.
Jake's going to get it too, so we can play it. But yeah, just go ahead and go into it.
He said, "If you keep thinking about the negative,
we got it."
Okay, here, that way you can hear the way he says it as well.
We had an opportunity to win all 3 games. We didn't, and now we have a chance to move forward in the next one. And you cannot trip on what's behind you. We didn't play well enough, and we got beat. And if you keep thinking about the negative, you're going to lose sight of what's coming in front of you. And I know that we have to challenge each other as coaches and challenge each other as players to be better, but you need to do that with a positive mindset. And sometimes we all have a tendency to take it from the negative standpoint. I'm telling you guys, 18 to 22-year-olds can't handle the negative side of things. And we have to, and I'm asking you guys, I'm asking for your help. We need to be more positive. I know we can play better. You know we can play better. But we've got to give these kids more positive things, because we've got a great locker room in there, kids that do care about each other, kids that love each other, coaches that believe in these kids, and we can't give up on them.
So, Coach, I'm curious your reaction to that whole statement, but in particular the part where he's asking the folks in the media for more positivity about his team.
Well, for a guy who's been around a pretty long time, that was a little naive, I think, because, you can never look at the media as being your opponent. You also can't ask them to be your teammate. And it's, it's just not their job. And, you know, when you're a football coach, you have to thoroughly understand that. He's got a, you know, and I get it. I totally get what he's saying. And to a degree, he's right. If that was your job, or if that was the media's job, or if they had the same ownership in these kids that he does, but nobody else has got this ownership except him and the people around him. So he's got to do everything he can do to control what is heard by his team. And that means teaching them how, or trying to teach them how to listen and how to not buy into the negative. And, I mean, that's as much a coach's job, maybe more so than anything that they do. And those are things that are not understood by the people who watch and write about and either adore or criticize teams and players, is that so much of this game is mental. And he's not going to get a lot of help from other people. He can get help from people on his side, and that's everybody in the school, everybody who touches the players. You know, I ran into that at Northwestern especially. It was just awful. And, the media didn't even want to cover it. We couldn't even get them to come to practice. That's how bad it was. But, you know, you have to create a culture where everybody that touches your players, that spends a minute with them, is sending a positive message. And that's in your control. The media is not in his control. And so he he's wasting time there. And what he does is create things for you and I to talk about on Wednesday mornings. But, you know, he doesn't need to do that. There's enough other stuff to talk about. He doesn't need to throw one more log onto the fire to burn it. So, that's just the approach. And Chris has been around long enough to where he knows that, but he's feeling bad for his players, and he's reaching out and trying to find anything. And I think he just needs to do a little more looking inwards to the people that touch his players all the time. And, you know, it used to be you only heard that if you listen to talk radio, which players don't listen to talk radio, or if you listen to, you read the newspapers. Before, you know, you didn't have the social media outlets and ways for everybody to know it, and 15 TV shows on it, and this and that. And they'll watch more TV than they'll listen to the radio, But, you know, that comes with the territory. That's part of the education. That's part of the teams that win, ignore all that stuff. The teams that come back, find a way to ignore all that stuff. So that's sort of his job.
And Coach, for Kansas State, we talked about this at the beginning of the season. It was important for them to get off to a fast start and get wins against Stanford and to beat Nevada, because once conference play started, man, it was three incredibly tough games in a row at Oklahoma State, home against Oklahoma, and then home against Iowa State. And even though they were very competitive in all three of those games, they lost. They lost three in a row, and if K-State fans, of course, they have every right to be unhappy. That's up to them. But, I mean, it's no embarrassment to lose to any of those teams. And now, at Texas Tech, even though they're slight underdogs, at Texas Tech, home against TCU, at Kansas, home against West Virginia, I don't think any of us would blink if K-State went on a run here and won 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 4. Now, overall, they've lost 8 conference games in a row, which was kind of a surprise when I saw that. But those were 3 tough games to start the conference season. They'll finish off with Baylor and Texas, but things lighten up here a little bit. How concerned should K-State fans be with 8 conference losses in a row? Or is this just a situation, look, at Oklahoma State, way better team than we thought. Oklahoma's Oklahoma, and then Iowa State, even though they've underachieved, that's a very talented team. It was going to be tough to win any of those games anyway, and now they're going to fatten up on a lighter part of the schedule, and things are leaving out.
Well, and they didn't get blown out.
No.
Right? I mean, they've been in every game, like you said, and it's been close. And it's been the little things that have beat them. And you know, they played well. It's just the other teams played better. It's all about whoever wins plays better than the other guy. It's not who's playing for you. It's how you play, and you got to play that way that day. And sometimes you're not as good a team talented wise, but you play better than the other team. So you got to get your team to play better. And he is approaching part of this. That was a brutal 3 games, no question about it. But he knew they were coming, and he got them ready. They played. They didn't play as well. So now he's got to look at the rest of these games. And Texas Tech's a game he can win, even though I can't believe Tech is actually favored against them only by a point, but that's hardly anything. But his job now is to keep them hitting the rock, because the rock will break if you keep hitting it with enough force. But if that force slackens and you don't have enough, then it's going to take you longer to break that rock. So he's just got to keep them going, and they'll break through and they'll end up in the bowl game. If they keep their heads down and keep playing hard. But that's the leadership in the locker room. That's where that comes from. And the leadership from the coaching staff and his program. So it's just the complications of the game and having that many people and all the dynamics of teams. And so it's and playing complementary football.
All right, Coach. So Kansas does play Oklahoma. They're 38.5-point underdogs in this game at home. We don't really need to focus on that. To me, like we keep saying, Leipold's got to get his guys in there. It's going to be a process. But from the Oklahoma standpoint, I am kind of curious where you see things, sitting with the quarterback situation at Oklahoma. All of a sudden, they've made this change, and things have gone better. Spencer Rattler's calling it an awkward situation right now. What do you think of what's happening with the quarterback at Oklahoma, and how do you think that changes their prospects for the rest of the year?
Have you seen him play, Nate?
He's good.
I'll tell you what's going on. They got themselves a heck of a quarterback, what they've got.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to find another place to go to school, probably.
Yeah.
But, he's much more dynamic than Spencer Rattler is or has been at any point in his career. I mean, it's night and day. And this kid unifies the rest of the team. He's a heck of a player. And, talk about getting excited about having 1 5-star. How about at Oklahoma, where 1 5-star quarterback doesn't play well, so they play the other 5-star quarterback instead. So, there's a perfect example. But, I don't think they have an issue. I think they got him a heck of a quarterback for a while, and He's gonna make that team. He's already made that team a better team.
We have Coach Gary Barnett on the line, and Coach, not a whole bunch of great matchups, but this weekend, but boy, there's one I can't wait to watch. 2:30 on Fox. Undefeated Oklahoma State goes to Ames to take on Iowa State. And Iowa State, look, if they win that game, they're 3-1, and they tie Oklahoma State. Looking forward to this game, what do you think happens in Ames between Oklahoma State and Iowa State? Iowa State is favored by a touchdown.
I couldn't believe it when I saw that. I mean, this Oklahoma State team, and I think I said last week, I didn't think they had enough on offense. Well, I was wrong. You know, Iowa State's hitting their stride. They're playing like everybody thought they would play coming out of the hat in September. But they are now playing like they're capable of playing. And you're right. I think this is a great game. It can go either way. I'm surprised Iowa State's favored. You know, they get 3 points for playing at home and then 4 points for being a better team. But it still comes down to who plays better there. And you do have a tendency to play better at home than you do on the road. And so these two teams are very close. You know, to me, turnovers will make the difference in this game. And the running game for Iowa State with Breece Hall is really, really has become really good. It wasn't much early, but it is now. But I agree with you, a heck of a game. You know, it's hard for me to go against Oklahoma State when they've played as well as they have against as many good people as they have.
Jake wants to know how much confidence he should have if he decides to take the Cowboys and that touchdown.
Well, if I'm getting 7 points, I'm really liking the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jake, tell me something.
Cha-ching.
That's right. He had that circle for me to ask you about, so I'm glad I can help Jake out with his weekend plans. All right, Coach, a final question for you. Ed Orgeron, this will be his last year at LSU, and boy, there's some wild stories coming out about Coach O and how things have gone the past year or so. But I'm just curious what your reaction is to LSU and Coach O parting ways and who you think is going to take over. If you got a best guess or you think a perfect fit, who might step in and take over at LSU?
Well, there's been a longstanding history of Ed. Those of us who know Ed, this isn't his first trial and his first issue with all the things that have happened. And if you read the article in the Athletic, it was pretty telling.
Yes.
And very blunt. But, I think this was decided the week before, and they made the decision to make the announcement, win or lose against Florida. They end up winning a fantastic game and not playing fantastically, but winning a fantastic game to watch. So I think it's been coming. It's just it's years and years of the same kind of behavior to some extent. You know, the only name that really, really grabs me out there, because I know his ability to move around quickly, is Mel Tucker. He was there with Saban. I do think maybe he's thinking about Alabama down the road, but Mel has gone into Michigan State without my best wishes, but he's gone in there and done a heck of a job. And he's got a history down there. Michigan State's always going to be one of those teams that's trying to be one of the guys you have, but LSU is a program and a team with a program that has what you need. And so that name sort of jumps out to me. After that, I'm not really sure. I think everything else is speculation. It's way too early. That's three big jobs that are open right now. So it's interesting to see how this is all going to go down. I don't know if there's enough really good coaches to take those jobs, but Mel Tucker would be the one that, of all the names I see out there, that one sort of jumps out to me.
For people that don't know, and you mentioned that you went there without your best wishes, after spending 1 year at Colorado, he jumped to to Michigan State. What was just the fact that he was only there for a year, or how he handled it? What irked you about that?
Yes. All the above.
All right, we got it.
And a few other things that will not get mentioned, but all of that.
So if they're calling you for a reference, they should probably mm-hmm. call someone else then.
Right. Lose my number.
Okay, well.
Vegas odds has Lane Kiffin at the top of the list.
Oh, please.
I'm just telling you.
Happen. I want that for everyone.
Why would you invite that problem?
I'm just saying. You know, I paid attention.
It's already got problems.
I pay attention to what Vegas says.
I just want to see that. So that brings up one more question I had for you. So we saw what happened in Tennessee, right, with Lane Kiffin, in the field being pelted with plastic bottles, glass bottles, golf balls, and everything else. And it's you're hitting cheerleaders and student athletes and people with projectiles that can hurt them. Obviously, it was terrible behavior by the Tennessee crowd. I'm just curious what you thought of that, because look, Lane Kiffin, again, people were unhappy the way he handled his departure there. But we've seen, boy, Tennessee, that there are some crazy people following that program. I'd like to get your reaction to what we saw after that game.
Well, I did games down there. Right before, when I was doing national radio, I did a couple of games before, which is, by the way, one of my favorite places to go, no question. But I did games before Lane got there. I did games while Lane was there, and I did games afterwards. And I can tell you that fan base does not forget. And that fan base was brutal and bitter around when he was there and when he left and how he left. And there's a book called Fourth and Long by John Bacon, and if you get a chance, there's a couple chapters in there on Lane Kiffin. Go through that and read it, and you'll sort of get a feel for it. But, you know, that kind of behavior, it was predicted. I mean, I could have told you that was going to happen if you'd asked me. I would have expected it. I would hope it wouldn't happen. I mean, it's not like playing in Nebraska or Penn State where you just got, you know, a totally respectful crowd 99.75% of the time. You go in the SEC in a couple of those places, that's what's going to happen, and it could happen. And it did. But it was all around the fact that it was Lane Kiffin. I don't think that kind of behavior is, I think that's, you know, it's absolutely awful, but it's not the kind of behavior you see week in and week out. It was all focused on Lane Kiffin. And people got a lot of frustration out by, you know, performing the way they did. But, so it was predictable. It's awful. There's no place for it at any time. But it shows you the volatility of the fan base, what it can be, and how important this game is to some people in some parts of the country. And it's, you know, they got fined, and they should get more fined than the one they got, I think.
Coach, it's always wonderful talking college football with you. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
You do the same thing. That's Gary Barnett. I could have talked to him for a couple of more hours. Jake, see if he's available after the show just so I can call him and talk to him.
Maybe podcast material there.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Coach, you're doing a podcast on Mel Tucker. Would you like to be involved in it? We'll be back after this.
I like to call him the Ryan Tucker.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.